mi
do.
This is my ringtone when you call me. This is what I hear.
You know what? I'm going to make it my ringtone.
It's perfect.
I have goosebumps.
Yeah.
I love this song.
The Nairobi Trio at Lollapalooza, one night only.
Oh, you know what? They would kill.
They would kill. Journey Gunderson joins us right now. Journey is the executive director of the National Comedy Center, here to talk about the great Ernie Kovacs. And Journey, I want to get this out of the way right now. You have the coolest name I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, well, thank you for saying so. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Ernie Kovacs is someone that I didn't know very much about until maybe I was in my 20s. And Channel 11 WTTW used to rerun the Ernie Kovacs show. And they're black and white, and his lovely wife, Edie Adams, mm-hmm. Who was at one point part of the Nairobi Trio.
Right.
It was just amazing to me to watch these special effects unfold. For people who are listening right now who may not have heard of him, why don't you explain the genius of Ernie Kovacs?
Sure. And I'm glad that you segued in that way, because we really exist, the National Comedy Center, to recognize comedians as cultural innovators. And so we presume that the average person may not have a healthy appreciation for how influential Ernie Kovacs has been. Part of that is because his career was cut short by his untimely death, sort of at the peak of his creativity and people wondering what he would possibly do next. But really, celebrating a craftsman like Ernie Kovacs gets right to the core of our mission. His work, it didn't just push boundaries, it shattered them. And it sort of marked the advent of a new type of bold and irreverent popular culture. So it went on to inspire and influence Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, subsequently Saturday Night Live. Letterman cited Kovacs as an influence, and you can see that in the work. Also Johnny Carson. And so the list goes on in terms of how the genius of Ernie Kovacs and his nature to experiment and not feel bound by the rigidity of maybe a sitcom formula or other things that were sort of popular on television at the time, it changed comedy forever.
Journey, the story that I had always heard about him was that he would come up with these ideas or these concepts, sometimes just a very, very brief idea on screen, and they'd be so expensive, and they would fight with him, and they'd say, that's our whole budget for one 30-second bit. Is that true? Is that the way he normally operated?
Yes, as far as my archivist and our researchers have educated me in putting together the exhibit that debuts in August at the National Comedy Center, it's something where TV was his playground. And, you know, there was a time he was given 2 hours, which is unheard of, especially today, you know, to do whatever he wanted. And he had to figure out how to fill that time with a $15 budget. And
what?
So, yes, I think depending on the idea, you know, he might blow all of that budget on one concept that he thought would fly. And otherwise, he was bringing in stuff from his own house, you know, his own personal objects just to play around with and experiment with. And it's incredible that this happened in the early days of television, when I think most people naturally, when they think back to that time period, again, think of more rigid, formulaic sitcom setups. And so Ernie was a genius.
He kind of combined radio and TV, which was brilliant. My only comment about this is, why was he not a leading man? He was so unbelievably handsome.
Well, that's a really good question, because that is very true.
He was so handsome. His wife was so beautiful.
It could be, I don't want to speak out of turn. My theory on that would be that he wasn't somebody that could be controlled. And again, his nature was to be completely experimental. The things he was doing felt surreal to watch. And so maybe that's not the type of person that you want to cast as a leading man who you know, is supposed to be a certain way, let's say.
Although, to his credit, there were movies. I remember Our Man in Havana. He was a leading man in that. There was another movie or two where they did put him in that role as a leading man, and he pulled it off.
Yeah.
You know, just not enough chances. You said you just used the word surrealistic, which is so accurate, Journey, but I would almost put it, now I know this normally sounds like a negative, but I don't mean it as a negative. Sometimes it was nightmarish. When you watch those clips of the Nairobi Trio, it's almost like something you might have had in a nightmare, much less watched on TV, you know what I mean?
And when they breathed, you could see the rubber mask going in and out.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. This is something where, you know, I'm sure not all of it appealed to all viewers, and like you say, could feel, I don't know what the word is, but, you know, beyond surreal, it felt like you were seeing something that was an experiment at the time, which in and of itself could make people uncomfortable as they're watching television, you know, and especially in the early days of what are these devices in our home and what are we going to see when we turn them on? And so it's sort of hard to express just how bold what Ernie Kovacs was doing was at the time. You know, nowadays everything is so fractured. There's so many options and things to tune into that almost nothing could surprise you in terms of somebody thinking, well, this will find an audience. So when you think back to the fact that there were, you know, only a few major networks, and this was the early days of TV at all, and people didn't have choice, it makes that level of experimentation that much more profound.
Sometimes with the Nairobi Trio, he'd throw a celebrity in, right? I remember, it wasn't Jack Lemmon in there once, or Frank Sinatra, I think I remember, right?
Yes. You know, he collaborated, the list of folks that he collaborated with is pretty long, and in fact, skipping ahead a little, our advisory board at the National Comedy Center includes George Slaughter, obviously
Laugh-In.
The creator of Laugh-In, and you know, he and his wife, Jolene Brand, have been to Jamestown to the National Comedy Center and absolutely are emphatic in their praise for what it is that we're doing. And, you know, they were with him the night he passed away and remember very well, sort of vividly for us, what that was like and what it felt like in terms of the world being robbed of this genius who had so much more potential. And I think it's interesting also that so many people willingly cite him, you know, Rowan from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. It wasn't like anybody was insecure about having borrowed from him. People had such a respect for his innovation and his level of work that they, you know, outwardly said, yes, we're borrowing this from him, or this is, you know, influenced by him. And I think that in and of itself speaks volumes.
You mentioned Laugh-In, and Bill and I were both big fans of the show, and then watching old episodes, I'm finding it not as funny as I thought it was, but going back to watch these Ernie Kovacs shows, I'm sorry, maybe it's just my opinion, but like, whip out a Percy Dove tonsils, it's still funny to me, yet it's completely bizarre.
Yes, definitely ventured pretty daringly between cerebral and bizarre, and you know, those, and created really some of the most inventive and influential content to that date or since. For example, his silent show, a half-hour comedic sort of tour de force with no dialogue, and Kovacs on Music, which was like a surrealistic mashup of image and sound, and this inspired generations of video artists, you know, comedy or otherwise. Those remain high water marks in the history of broadcasting. So the question of how much further could he have gone is, you know, something that, you know, we can only wonder. But what our job is now is to convey to visitors to the National Comedy Center that this is an important cultural icon that everyone should know about and appreciate, and we're doing our best in exhibit form to convey his brilliance and his genius. You mentioned those glasses. Among items in the exhibit, we do have the iconic eyeglasses for his Percy Dove. Yes.
That's worth a trip to New York just for that.
I would go just for that. And didn't they, when he would do that character, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they shoot it through kind of a, almost like a fisheye lens that distorted his face to some extent? Is that right?
Yes, and if you see the thickness of the eyeglasses in person, as I now have, It all makes sense.
I would wear those when no one else was around, Journey. I would just put those on and walk around.
You've tried them on. Come on, be honest.
I would.
I'm wearing them right now.
Good for you.
No. We do, in all seriousness, take great care with our artifacts. If you met our archivist, Laura LaPlaca, she's brilliant and has been working hand-in-hand with Josh Mills and the estate, to make sure that these items, as well as incredible scripts and creative papers, are properly preserved but also presented, because artifacts, they need to be cared for and preserved, but they don't do anyone any good if they're not engaged with. And that's been our mantra at the National Comedy Center. Let's put some of these amazing archives and comedy that previously had no place to go, let's put them on display for visitors and allow them to glimpse with their own eyes this creative process. In the exhibit, we also have the makeup kit that he used to transform into his various characters, and the Emmy Award won posthumously for his ABC show, The Ernie Kovacs Show, for outstanding achievement in electronic camera work.
We're talking to Journey Gunderson, the executive director of the National Comedy Center in New York. We'll pick this conversation up about Ernie Kovacs in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Journey Gunderson. She is the executive director of the National Comedy Center, located in New York. There's a big anniversary. It's the 100th anniversary of Ernie Kovacs, so they're celebrating him. This is the sad part of his life. Even though he was making us laugh on screen, Journey, his behind-the-scenes persona wasn't always very happy. I know he was fighting a horrible custody battle at some point. How is he able to make people laugh when his own personal life was in such disarray?
Well, that's a question you could ask and insert the name of, probably dozens of comedy geniuses, and the question would still apply, unfortunately. It's something where in this community, and maybe this goes for all of the arts, it's not uncommon to find the very people who are making us laugh are struggling in their personal lives. I remember, this is a small example, but I remember even Daryl Hammond from Saturday Night Live, one of the longest employed cast members of the show in terms of duration, said he grew up in an abusive household, and that's how he learned to be funny, because he had to learn very early on, how do I break the tension in this room? And that point, the latter part of that is what I love and what we try to convey at the National Comedy Center. What is comedy? We kind of break it down, and it's about finding where the tension point is and breaking the tension in a room. And that in and of itself is a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, like you said, Ernie Kovacs, but also many others, are dealing with pain. And, maybe this is their therapeutic way of dealing with it, of trying to bring some joy into the world and making others laugh.
And Ernie's motto was pretty much nothing in moderation. He worked long hours. He drank a lot. He went to light a cigar as he lost control of his car and died. And when he died, he had so much IRS back taxes due. And we spoke to Edie Adams, and she did everything she could. She worked tirelessly to pay off every debt that he had. So she's a remarkable woman as well.
Yeah, and I think those things, you see those things pretty common in the entertainment industry as well, and it's something where we need to remember there's a tremendous amount of pressure that comes with opportunity. So, as an aspiring artist, you're trying so hard to find an audience, then you get big breaks, so to speak, where someone's putting you on television for 2 hours with a budget of $15. All of your energy, generally, if you are a talented performer and artist, you're probably likely also to be a perfectionist. All of your talent and energy is going into making that as good as it can be. And so, it's not uncommon to find that other parts of these kind of genius artists are talking about, other parts of their lives maybe aren't as well maintained or cared for. And I think that makes some sense. There's a lot of pressure on the creative. And you know, thank goodness his focus was where it was.
If anyone's heading to New York, it'll be the debut of the Ernie Kovacs Centennial Exhibit. It opens on August 7th. You can also go to erniekovacs.com and check out his website and stay connected to them. Very briefly here, Journey, the National Comedy Center has only been open for a year. Bill and I knew nothing about it. Granted, we're here in Chicago, but how did this begin?
Oh, great question. So Jamestown, New York, which is in western New York State, so closer to Chicago than, say, New York City. It's actually equidistant approximately between Chicago and New York City, is Lucille Ball's hometown. And it was Lucille Ball herself who said to Jamestown in the late 80s, you know, don't just celebrate me. Don't just have an I Love Lucy or Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz Museum. Celebrate all of comedy. Make Jamestown, my hometown, a destination for that. And so the National Comedy Center, which just opened last August, embodies that vision and is a 37,000-square-foot, $50 million museum attraction that some people say, don't even call it a museum, it's an experience. And it really is one of the most interactive, high-tech, innovative museums anywhere in the world right now. But yet we've grounded what is a very immersive, interactive experience with artifacts throughout. So for those of you who want to stand in the presence of the DNA of the greatest of all time, you're seeing Charlie Chaplin's cane or George Carlin's joke archives and handwritten notes, or Harold Ramis's suit from Ghostbusters. But you're also filling out a sense of humor profile at the beginning that's loaded onto a digital chip around your wrist that allows exhibits to read the room and present you content based on your sense of humor. So,
wow.
We got to do a remote from there. Comedycenter.org, is that the correct website?
It is.
We got to go out there.
Journey, at the Baseball Hall of Fame, they won't let Pete Rosen or Barry Bonds. Who's the comedian you won't let in to the National Comedy Center?
Besides Carrot Top.
What a hot button question.
All right.
Fortunately, we actually took the approach conceptually and creatively that we approach comedy by genre and subject matter and really the bodies of work versus it being Mount Rushmore in its style. So while people ask that often in the development phase, because various folks were on trial for different things, how are you going to handle this? It wasn't as difficult to navigate for us as you might think, and our compass and guide was just the onus to the great storytelling. If it's a critical story to the history of comedy in America, we included it, and we didn't ignore bodies of work or pretend they didn't exist. But again, we're set up to talk about the artwork and the bodies of work more so than popularity of individuals.
We have got to run. It's so great to talk to you. How long does this exhibit run?
The exhibit runs, it starts August 7th and goes, you know, for several months beyond that. And I think it remains to be seen, you know, based on the popularity of visitation. And so, you know, we're going to launch it, like we said, August 7th and keep it up, you know, at least for the next several months. I should mention there are also many artifacts on display that are only on display this year, such as the iconic puffy shirt from Seinfeld that leaves this fall. And so there's an urgency to getting to the National Comedy Center each year.
We'll be in touch. We need to get a remote and go out to New York and see this.
Sounds like so much fun.
Thank you so much, Journey.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Journey Gunderson, the executive director of the National Comedy Center located in New York. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.